available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner gonna try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome everyone back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network. I couldn't even hold it together.
Well, this is Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. That's how we start off the show. Dave, if you don't know, Dave tries to like go with a different cadence to screw me up. That one definitely screwed me up because I couldn't stop laughing. But together, we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football, the regular season, championship weekend, all has come to an end. Now we have bowl season to look forward to, so we're going to talk about that. We'll recap Oregon's dominating win over Utah. We got some news that's been breaking around the conference, and we got some of your questions. I know we just recorded later last week, but we still got some questions that have come in. Pac-12podcast@gmail.com if you'd like a question for our next show. I think, David, next show we'll probably preview all the bowl games, right?
I don't know about all of them. So we've got definitely one we can preview. I mean, we'll get into the schedule. I think we could probably split it up over two shows.
Okay.
Because we can do one. There's a game, not this weekend, but the next weekend. And then the week following, we can do all of the other games.
Okay. So we'll do that. We'll play it by ear. I mean, we always plan this out meticulously or just...
As you can tell.
Fly by the seat of our pants. So yeah, Pac-12podcast@gmail.com. Or if you'd rather call or text, 424-532-0678. You can tweet us at Pac-12podcast. And the website, Pac-12podcast.com. Please subscribe, rate us, five-star ratings and positive reviews on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, Megaphone, anywhere, you know, where else we got? Anywhere you can check out podcasts, we should be there, and you should leave us something nice to say. If you, that would be great. We like that, Dave.
We do like nice things. We'll take even kind of average things. So I'll give you an example.
Okay.
Bateman 503 gave us a 5-star review. Subject line, not too shabby. Body, this is a pretty decent podcast. The guys are knowledgeable about Pac-12 football, which is nice. I love that that's Bateman 503's bar for a 5-star rating. It's fine. Like, it's okay. Cool.
Are you a, great. Like, if I rate anything, I always just do the highest. Like, I mean, do you ever, like, I mean, it would have to be terrible. Like, I
mean, I'd have to have some serious beef to not rate it at least 4 stars.
Yeah. I just don't know. Like, I don't think I could do the 4-star thing. Like, if I like it, it's just going to, I'll give it a 5-star. Like, I'm not going to be like, oh, well, it was. It was like you see some of the Amazon reviews, like, I loved everything except, I don't know, the guy that delivered the package, he was not nice to me, so I'm going to give this 4 stars. Like, okay, that doesn't make much sense. But
yeah, it's the Yelpification of everything, because it's like, if it's not 4 stars on Yelp, it's actually piss.
Yeah.
Like, it's actually horrible. Or there's been, like, some real vendetta from somebody against that restaurant, whatever it is. But if it's not 4 stars on there, and 4 stars is the second highest thing. But no, people aren't willing to dole out that like 2-star review anymore.
No, I don't know what it is, but whatever. That's people are strange. People are strange.
Ooh, no. I can't deal with the Doors when it's a normal person singing it, but no.
When I'm
not listening, I'm not listening to you sing the Doors.
I can't. Well, first of all, I can't sing, so that's not like.
I mean, I thought it was beautiful. I thought you've got real dulcet tones, as we've talked about, but. No way. And I mean, I guess it was better because it didn't come with that like terrible organ sound in the background, but no Doors.
Okay. No, you're not a Doors fan.
No. Okay. No. Under no conceivable circumstances.
All right. So our picks for the Pac-12 championship game did not go our way. So ending the regular season, we both finished 0-1 for the championship game. We both took Utah, and that did not work out. Oregon won. Neither of us are above 500, so we need a good bowl. You don't need that great of a bowl season because you're only one game below. I am seven or so, so I need a much better bowl. I got
to
go 7-0.
You need to sweep. You need to sweep to end up 500.
Yay, that's good. Well, hopefully you didn't listen to us, and you do listen to us when we talk about my bookie. Maybe not our picks, but for my bookie, you can do so many cool things there. And, you know, I think betting bowl season can be fun because it's a crapshoot, right? Dave, I mean, these teams take a month off. Some people like USC, they're not practicing right now, where Iowa's out there practicing. So what's going to happen when the bowl comes around? Coaches leave. You just never know. But I think you can have a lot of fun if you get a little action on all these games at MyBookie. They've been great to us. Hopefully you guys took advantage of that Bears-Lions game for Thanksgiving, where they gave you the free bet for $250. Because even if you didn't win it, you got your money back. So that's great stuff. But they still have the $1,000 deposit. If you deposit up to $1,000, you will get your money matched by MyBookie. So they do a really good job there with the payouts. It's really easy site to use. You go to mybookie.ag, and they've been awesome to us over the last couple of years. So I hope you guys make sure you go check it out. Just log on to mybookie.ag. Make that first deposit using promo code PAC12, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar to jumpstart your bankroll. So make sure you check it out, mybookie.ag. Lots of fun games in the bowl season, not just the PAC12, but all the bowls. So hopefully you guys get a chance to check it out, and hopefully our picks, David, are better than before.
I hope so. I hope so. It was a smooth read, Ryan. I thought it was very good.
Thanks.
Absolutely no glitches happened in the middle of that read. We have not had to do any audio engineering at this point.
No.
That was the smoothest it's ever been.
Yeah. We're just rolling right along. I'm a little under the weather. And so to start the show, when you made me laugh, that was pretty funny. So if I cough up a lung or something, my apologies to all the listeners. But I don't think that we're going to doom ourselves. I don't think it's going to be a long show. But that means... But that means it's definitely going to be a long show, right?
Like somebody should have. You know what? We should have a soundboard of you saying that.
Yeah,
I don't think it's going to be a long show.
No,
and we should just play that at the 2-hour mark every single show.
Yeah. Well, as far as the rankings go, not much changed. College football rankings, you know, besides the Utah-Oregon almost swap, Oregon's up to number 6. Utah drops to number 11. USC stayed at number 22, we didn't do any kind of official power rankings, but we just swapped Oregon and Utah at the top. Any other issues with that, David?
No, that seems fine to me. I think Oregon pretty much definitively put their stamp at number 1.
Yeah. We do have, let's see, so maybe we'll start with the all Pac-12 teams. Do we want to go? I don't know if we want to go through all that stuff. General stuff in the All Pac-12. Did you read what John Wilner wrote about Oregon getting snubbed? As far as like the team that won the conference to only have 4 total players and 1 on the first team All Pac-12 team, he went back through the last 6-7 years, and it's just not been like that. And his theory was, and it's voted by the rest of the coaches. You can't vote for your own team. That a lot of coaches won't. So Kyle Whittingham gets Coach of the Year, not Mario Cristobal. And they don't get a lot of players on there. And his point, which I thought was really good, both can't be right. You either think that Oregon has a lot of talent, so you don't want to give Mario Cristobal the Coach of the Year because they're the most talented team, or they won the conference and it was great coaching, but they don't have a lot of talent, so you don't put a lot of the guys on the All Pac-12 team. You can't really have both. So I thought that was a really good point by Mr. Wilner.
It is. I also don't know. So the big star for Oregon, like the guy who you think has the most star power, is Justin Herbert. But I don't know. I look at Tyler Huntley and Anthony Gordon, and I can see why they were picked over him. And then if I'm thinking about the offense, what I maybe would have done differently is I think 3 of the Oregon offensive linemen could have been all first team.
Sure.
And 2 of them got second team, 1 got first team in Penei Sewell. But I thought that could have been different. But like, think about it. The wide receivers... Who on Oregon is going to get in over Ayuk or Pittman or Chenault or Hodgins?
Yeah.
It's been more of a accumulation of guys rather than like one big star. I think it was the way that team is built, especially offensively. I just don't know that there's, if Herbert wasn't dominant this year and had some, kind of rough games in big spots, obviously not at the end, but had some rougher games in big spots. Without him, I don't know that there's like that skill position guy where you're saying, oh, wow, that's definitely an all Pac-12 first team guy.
Yeah.
Defensively, it seems crazy to me, though. Defensively, they didn't have a single first teamer. And getting only Troy Dye, it looks like, on the second team, that's nuts.
No, it's crazy. And then, so real quick from the top. So Zach Moss got the Offensive Player of the Year. I don't have any issue with that. Do you have an issue with that?
No, that seems fine.
Evan Weaver, who had, I think, 785 tackles this year, linebacker for Cal. He gets the Pat Tillman Defensive Player of the Year. And then Whittingham, like we said, the Coach of the Year. Freshman Offensive Player of the Year, Keaton Slovis from USC. Freshman Defensive Player was Kayvon Thibodeau from Oregon. Interesting, he gets the Freshman Defensive Player of the Year, but doesn't make the All-Pac-12 team, where USC's Drake Jackson makes All-Pac-12 second team. And he's a freshman. He didn't, you know, so obviously you're saying Thibodeau's better than Drake Jackson.
Watching what Thibodeau did in only the Pac-12 championship game should have made him second team at least.
Yeah. And you, why would he not be above Drake Jackson, who wasn't the freshman player of the year, but he's on the team? Like, it was very Pac-12 of, you know, just to, but I guess it's the coaches that are voting this. But I don't know how you could vote for him to be a freshman player of the year and not on the all Pac-12 team somewhere.
Well, it's just crazy. I mean, Oregon was, I don't know, probably the second or third best defense this year. And to only have one All-Pac-12 selection, first or second team defensively, is nuts.
Yeah.
Utah had five first-teamers, which I think is fine and right. But
Washington had a lot, and they were 7-5. You know, it's like...
And Washington had a good defense this year, but it wasn't a dominant defense, and it was pretty comparable to Oregon's. So I don't know. That seems nuts to me. But yeah, Thibodeau, I think he should have been a DL pick, but I think you could have picked one of those DBs as well. Yeah, I think that was a real miss defensively. Offensively, I get it more, but defensively, I think that's a real miss.
Do you think the way that Oregon's recruiting, do you buy Wilner's kind of hypothesis that with the way Oregon's recruiting, this is sort of like taking a shot at them, so it doesn't help them recruit more or anything? I mean, what do you feel like this is?
They
vote for this after the championship game. So this isn't like, well, we picked Whittingham before the championship game. It's like, I get it. Like, they either have to be really talented or really well coached, and the poll said neither was true. So that doesn't make any sense.
Well, this is picked by the coaches, right?
Right. Yeah.
So by that, we mean it's picked by the SIDs.
Yes.
And by that, we mean they're mostly counting stats.
Yeah.
With a lot of this stuff. So I wonder if it was a combination of factors, but I wonder if that was part of it too. And that's a little dirty secret about all these things. It's not actually the coaches often picking these things. It's mostly the sports information or communications people who are picking the teams, because the coaches don't have time for that crap. So I could have been some of a variety of different factors. I do agree with Wilner. You kind of have to give Oregon credit with something. I definitely lean more towards the talent side of it. I don't think Cristobal is an excellent coach, but he certainly, you know, showed something against Utah. So we'll see.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. We have, what else do we got on the docket? Some news. We talked about some of the guys turning pro. So three more names came out. So Utah safety Julian Blackman, who was in the, you know, running for Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year, ASU running back Eno Benjamin, and Colorado receiver KD Nixon, they are all going pro. I mean, no shock there, right?
KD Nixon, maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
But the other two, not really. And Blackman got hurt in the Oregon game, so I'm wondering how his health is.
Yeah,
and maybe that was kind of a... Yeah,
maybe part of that.
But wasn't he a senior, or am I completely confused?
No, I thought he was a junior. I could look it up real quick, but
I could have sworn he was a senior. But I could also be high, just high.
Yeah, that
bubbles.
Might be. Let's see. According to the Utah roster, he is a senior.
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever.
I'm just an
idiot. Let's recognize him. He was great, and honestly, I mean, when he was healthy, that game was looking a lot better for Utah. When he went out, it started to look pretty rough.
I was looking at like lists of people that turned pro. Maybe I just read that wrong or something. So my apologies to
it's
Utah
okay.
fans.
It's okay. You're under the weather. You're not at 100% today.
I am a little under the weather. Yeah, of course he's going pro. He's a senior. Okay.
Yeah.
Jake Bentley, so he was at South Carolina. He's going to go to Utah as a grad transfer. So potential there. I that's what's interesting now is when teams lose, you know, good quarterbacks. We've seen this at Oklahoma for 3 years in a row. You get like a transfer come in and maybe you don't miss a beat. So I know Utah loses a lot this year and maybe you rely on a couple transfers and Jake Bentley could be one of them to kind of get things back on track.
Yeah, and running a Will Muschamp offense, he was still pretty fine. So that's a really good sign. I mean, 62% completions, 7.9 yards adjusted yards per attempt, 27 touchdowns, 14 interceptions in 2018 before he got hurt this year. So seems like a decent enough get, stopgap guy in between whoever they bring in next.
True. We'll see what happens there. We'll talk about that in the spring. He is eligible. He'll be eligible in the fall. So, the coaching news in there, Oregon offensive coordinator Marcus Arroyo, he's going to be the new head coach of the UNLV running Rebels. And it looked like Dave Aranda, the LSU defensive coordinator, was in the running there. He gets paid $2.5 million at LSU. It would take a significant pay cut to go to UNLV, but it's coming from the Pac-12. So Marcus Arroyo, not that like the Oregon offense has been amazing. I don't know if he's the best recruiter in the world. He's, you know, as far as what Oregon's been doing there. So I'm not sure how big of a blow this is for the Ducks, but UNLV gets their head coach.
Yeah, that one, I don't know what to make of that, but good for him. Good for him. But yeah, Oregon's offense has not blown me away. And I don't know if what they do offensively is even really a fit at that level, but maybe he has a different background that I'm not aware of. Maybe he was, you know, something else. And then Cristobal has this style. Don't really know. But good luck to him. Hope he does well there. That's a potentially decent job, I would say. I mean, not obviously a world beater, but it's a potentially good Mountain West job if they get the right mix of coaches, especially with that, you know, new stadium and new investment in athletics in that city.
Yeah.
So maybe.
Speaking of Mountain West, Jeff Tedford, just real quick, former Cal head coach, he stepped down at Fresno State, had a really good few years there, but he had some health problems and he's stepping down. So that's a little, a bright spot as far as West Coast football goes for at least a couple years there, winning double-digit games twice in a row. They stepped a little back, you know, took a little step back this year, but former Cal head coach stepping down at Fresno State.
Yeah, and that's, I think, the second time he's had to step down from position due to health reasons. So hopefully he gets his health right. Hopefully we see him in coaching again at some point because he's gotten his health together because obviously a damn good coach.
Yeah, his name comes up a lot of times when you have Pac-12 openings and stuff. So, I've noticed this. Stanford's had a bunch of guys enter the transfer portal. There was some talk that David Shaw, there was some interest from the Washington Redskins. But it seems like from what I've read that Stanford's going to pretty much keep their coaching staff together. But players-wise, there's some dudes leaving, and Jovan Swan was the latest one that I heard entering the transfer portal.
Henry Hattis was another one.
Yeah.
Offensive lineman grad transferring out. But yeah, they're losing some bodies, and that is not a roster that could afford to lose a ton of bodies.
Yeah. Morgan Scaly, so he's not going to leave Utah, the defensive coordinator there, so he has a long-term extension. So that's good for the Utes. And then, Hunter Bryant, also to the NFL. I don't think we mentioned him before. So those are kind of like the little newsy things. Any other newsy stuff?
Yeah, I wonder if Scaly's being set up as, head coach in waiting.
Oh, that would be interesting, yeah.
I know there's been talk that Kyle Whittingham is not planning on doing that forever. He's 60 already. He might just, call it quits here sometime in the next couple of years. So. Yeah. That might be part of the deal there. And I know they'd probably love to keep the defensive mindset over there.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, I guess we got to do this. We got to do our
Pac-12 roundup.
And the game that you guys probably all saw was
Oregon Ducks
and
Utah Utes.
Yeah. Yeah, so Oregon dominated 37-15, beat the crap out of the Utes. It was really, I mean, it was a really impressive showing for Oregon to do what they did against what had been a very high-quality Utah team. I thought spoke to their preparation for the game, but also just, you know, that argument we were just talking about, though, is it Cristobal or is it talent? But you could just see it on the field. Oregon just has a ton more talent than Utah.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about that Utah defensive line all year. Oregon's offensive line dominated them all game, and it was not pretty. And on the other end, too, Oregon's defensive line, I mean, it was a much more average Utah offensive line, but they dominated that offensive line. Early on, you know, the first half, Oregon finished it 20-0. They shut out Utah in the first half. It did feel like there were a lot of missed opportunities for Utah. I mean, Oregon dominated the half, but it could have been closer at half. I think Utah had it something like within the Oregon 40 or 45 four times and produced no points from it. The opening drive for Utah was actually one of their better drives in the first half, but they got it to third and one at the Oregon 33. And then, and this I thought was a misstep for offensive coordinator Andy Ludwig, is I don't know that he recognized Oregon's speed advantage, especially because he kept trying to do a lot of like slower developing runs to the outside. And on two successive downs, they ran Zach Moss just kind of off tackle-ish. And each time it just got blown up because it was kind of slow developing and just had no real chance of working because of the blocking. But it's, you know, third and one, fourth and one. You're thinking he can power forward for a yard. Maybe go for a QB sneak there. I'm a big fan of the QB sneak on third and one no matter what, fourth and one no matter what. But I know some coaches don't love that. But, yeah, I mean, they had multiple opportunities to kind of at least get a field goal if they'd just been able to put together basically one more first down on four different occasions, and they just weren't able to do it. And meanwhile, Oregon broke out something on their first drive that they hadn't really done all year, which is Justin Herbert running the ball. You know, that had been a part of his game up until basically this season, and they hadn't really shown it at all this year. And then suddenly he was keeping on reads, he was doing designed runs, and that was a huge part of them just setting the tone early, that it was not going to be an easy night for Utah. Their game plan coming in was not going to be perfect. They were going to have to put a spy on Herbert. They were going to have to back off a little bit. And I think that just changed the complexion of the game from the very beginning, or set the tone for the complexion of the game from the very beginning. And that was from then on, it just seemed like Utah was on its heels and Oregon was kind of in the driver's seat. Now, to Utah's credit, they rallied in the second half, and they had this one at 23-15. And this is the other thing I want to talk about, and then I just want to stop talking about this game.
Okay.
You'll have things to say. But what I want to say about this game is Kyle Whittingham, with 9.5 to go in the fourth quarter, relinquished any opportunity to win the game. Down 23-15, they had the ball 4th and 4 at the Oregon 40. With 9.5 to go. They had just picked up 16 yards on a 3rd and 20 with this little dump off to Zach Moss. So they had the ball in, this is perfect position to go for it. And given the time on the clock with just 9.5 to go, this was the time that you had to do it. There were so many different reasons why you had to go for this. But first and foremost, Utah had not scored a bunch. They had finally gotten the offense a little bit moving in the second half, but still they were struggling. You're down 8. Even if you go on to score a touchdown on that drive, your odds of converting the two-point conversion are about 50-50. Like, long-term, that's about what your odds are on two-point conversion. So even if you score a touchdown that drive, you're very possibly going to need at least one more scoring drive. So you have to build in the possibility that even when you get the ball back, if you elect to punt here, that you're going to need it twice. Not once, twice.
Yeah.
By punting here with 9.5 to go, they're basically saying, okay, we can get the ball back twice with scoring opportunities. That's not going to happen. So stupid. Because you need to score there, and then you might need to score again. They needed to maintain possession of the ball. And that's even throwing out just the basic math where punting on 4th and 4 from the 40, unless it's like an end-of-game situation, is always a terrible idea. So they punt it. Oregon then immediately marches back down the field and scores the touchdown. The game's over. But I thought that was a really egregiously bad decision by Kyle Whittingham. And yes, that would have potentially tied a game if they'd gone on to score there that they had no business being in at that point because Oregon had dominated to that point. But their defense had started to play well. If they'd been able to score there, they might have pulled this one out. So I thought that was a huge missed opportunity from Whittingham.
Just to play devil's advocate, I don't know if you know, David, but if you go for it there and don't get it, you give Oregon the ball back with good field position.
Yeah, you do. That is true. That is true. I hadn't considered that, Ryan.
Well, you got to think.
You know, it's a really good point. It's a really good point. Definitely relinquishing the opportunity to win the game is worth 30 yards of field position.
No, I agree with you there. That was dumb. It was hard to believe that that was a one-score game at that point. You're like, this is a one-score game? The Justin Herbert running stuff. Well, first of all, that opening drive for Utah was nice. They really had a problem on the fourth down stuff. They went for it. I think that's probably the problem, too, is they went for it. I think they were 0-for-3 on fourth downs. They were at a 4th-and-1 on that opening drive they didn't get. So it's almost like they just haven't been successful on fourth downs. Maybe that played into his decision.
If at first you don't succeed, try again, just some bullshit our moms taught us, or is that something we're going to work with, Kyle?
No, dude, if I'm flipping a coin and it's heads 3 times in a row, I'm not betting it's going to come up heads.
I'm never flipping that thing again.
But the Justin Herbert running, I want to give – this has to be strategy. He hasn't – you watch him last year, you know, he was running the football. He just hasn't done it this year. That's not been – for whatever reason, if it's just to, like, you know, preserve him as far as, you know, not take as many hits, he hasn't run. And then he comes out and you see him in that, you know, even that opening drive, he was using his legs. And it was almost like the Return of the Jedi when Akbar and his, you know, his fleet are there and they're ready to attack the Death Star. And the Death Star starts shooting at him. They're like, holy crap, that thing's operational. That was like, you're kind of waiting for Justin Herbert could kill you with his arm. But then it's like, oh, crap, he's running now too. It almost seemed like it was demoralizing. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was really weird.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think they came in with it seemed like they obviously came in with a game plan. Utah, I mean, they've defended against a running quarterback before. They know how to do it. But it seemed like they were completely caught unawares by the fact that he was running the ball.
They had no idea that Death Star was shooting
them. It took them that time to adjust. And then Oregon had counterpunches set up. It was, you know what, we've knocked Cristobal and the coaching staff there a little bit over the years. But this was a dominant offensive game plan. Like, they had this thing schemed out correctly. And that's, you know, if we're in the process of reevaluating Mario Cristobal, this game is number one on the resume, because they took it to a Utah defense that was elite coming into this game, and they took it to them in a way that nobody else has. I mean, they ran the ball 41 times for 239 yards. That does not happen against this defense.
No.
Crazy.
Do you remember there was a block punt where I think it was like there was a 4th-and-1. And
you know who did that? You know who did that?
Who did that?
Kayvon Thibodeau.
Nice. But Utah like false started on 4th-and-1. So they were going to go for, I believe they were going to go for it. Then they had to punt.
Can I tell you? No. Can I tell you what that was also?
Okay.
So it was 4th-and-1 at the Oregon 38. Then it was 4th-and-6 at the Oregon 43. You know what that is also? A great opportunity to go for it.
Yeah. So they end up not going for it. They end up punting. Well, first of all, those are the worst. Like, if I'm a head coach and it's 4th-and-1 or whatever it is, it's something in 1. 2nd-and-1, we see this happen. Like, that's a great down, and then someone screws it up by getting a false start, and then you don't make it a first down. Like, if anyone screws up on the field on a down and distance to go with 1 yard, I'm like, don't move, don't do shit wrong, or you're benched. Like, you're out for the game. Like, if anyone screws up my 4th-and-1 or 2nd-and-1 or whatever, I'd say you're out. Like, those are the most painful penalties to watch, and especially when it's something like that where you're going to go for it and then you end up punting, which, as Dave said, you probably shouldn't do. And then you get the punt blocked.
Yep.
So that wasn't too good. Chris Felica tweeted, he said, so in the last 7 games for Utah, 4 times they haven't scored a point in the first quarter. But then they outscore opponents 44-7 in the second quarter in the other 3 games, but not in this one. It was just like, I don't know. I mean, Oregon just was going to dominate, but then I felt like they could have stretched the lead more. And then when Utah was close, like you said, they sort of they had opportunities, which I don't want to say they didn't deserve, but it was like this game shouldn't be a one-score game. And then it kind of screwed it up at that point. But I think at the end, that's the score probably reflects how it went, you know, 37-15.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like that's if you just looked at the score, I feel that's a fairly accurate representation of the game.
Yeah, and it wouldn't have been if there hadn't been the pile on late. But no, this was a fair representation of the game. Oregon did dominate it. Utah had a stretch. They gave themselves an opportunity with the way their defense played to open the third quarter, where they were just stoning the Oregon offense. And they came in. I mean, they came into the second half with a much better idea of what to do. And so that was good. But no, this was a really one-sided game. Oregon, they looked like the more talented team, and they had a better game plan coming in to deal with what Utah likes to do. And Tyler Huntley looked out of sorts. I mean, a lot of that was the Utah offensive line just not being able to block a soul. But Tyler Huntley looked out of sorts in a way he hasn't this year. They really disrupted this Utah offense. And aside from, you know, Zach Moss statistically ended up with, you know, 19 carries, 113 yards, but it was really dependent on kind of one big play where he got 42 yards.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it was not an efficient game for him. Didn't have a great day. But no, this was a really, really good game for Oregon. The best game they played this year by far.
I think so. And you look at, you know, what are you going to make of the Utes that's going to lose a lot, you know, off of this team? You know, a lot of wins. I mean, winning 11 games is great. You know, winning the South again and having a chance to, you know, win the championship game. You were a favorite in that game. But, you know, the two probably most athletic teams that they played all year, USC and Oregon, you end up losing to. And I think that's where this seems like a pretty talented team. Utah is like number 12 in recruiting right now. I think this is where Utah needs to take those steps where you start bringing in some of the better athletes, and it's not just about, hey, great special teams and great coaching and senior leaders and things like that. It's like, you got to build this up. And I think this was a great opportunity to do that. I don't know why they're the number 12 ranked recruiting class right now behind USC. I don't understand that. But I feel this is like a missed opportunity. Now, maybe it's just because there's going to be a small class. I don't know. But, you know, they got a, you know, 9 3-stars committed or something. I would expect Utah to kind of take, you know, better advantage of these last couple of years.
Yeah, I would, and we'll talk to Dan probably pretty soon here in the off season, and as well as Biggins and Huffman to figure out what's going on with Utah. But yeah, you would expect them to, based on the strength really of the last two seasons.
Yeah,
because last year they were a pretty damn good team too. You would expect them to be doing better in recruiting, and I don't think you blow up the model after you go 11-2. I mean, I think whatever they're doing is clearly working. As we've talked about for a long time, they've been the most consistent Pac-12 South program. But it did, at least, you know, to our eye, it did look. USC, Washington, and Oregon were the three most athletically talented teams they played this year. Oregon beat the crap out of them. USC beat them pretty good. And it was in a way that showed the athletic dominance that USC had over Utah, because they took on one of the best Utah units, that defensive secondary, basically man on man, and just showed, hey, we're better than you.
Yeah.
Michael Pittman's going to catch the ball over your best. That's just what's going to happen all game. And then Washington, even, I mean, they beat Washington, but that was a tight, tight game in the middle of Utah's most dominant stretch of the season. So I think they do need to upgrade, not a ton, but they need to upgrade slightly athletically. That's only going to be done through recruiting or the transfer portal. So I think they need to hit both pretty hard here.
Yeah.
Utah is a university where you can get transfers in, I think, pretty easily. And they've done that in the past. So hitting the grad transfer market, I think, is going to be huge if they're going to maintain, you know, something close to this level going into next year.
All right, why don't we take a quick break, and we'll come back and answer your questions.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, we're back here on the Podcast of Champions. David, I don't think we have anything else to talk about but questions.
Are we gonna go through the bowl schedule, or are we just gonna say no?
Oh, because I'm an idiot. Yeah, I guess we should go through the bowl schedule too. I really am not on top of my game right now, as you know.
No, you're incredible. You're doing great. You're doing great.
Not,
I'm proud of you.
Not on top of my game, but that's why we got you. You know, sometimes I can't do it all. Like most people know that I have to do most of the stuff, so sometimes you have to contribute.
I know, and it's a tough thing for me, but I can shoulder that like minor level of burden. Just that, though.
I have a list. Do you want me to start? Do you want to take turns? How do you want to do it?
I mean, are we going to do our sound effects for it?
Yeah, I guess I got to do it. Okay. So here is the bowl schedule. We're going to start off. I'll go in order of the dates that they're being played. And I'll play the sound, and then if you want to read what they're doing, we'll do that.
Sure.
All right. So this is first up. We have
Washington Huskies.
They are taking on the Boise State Broncos?
Yes.
Nay! Is that like a Bronco noise?
Yeah. The number 21, 12-1 Boise State Broncos.
Sure. Obviously, Chris Peterson's farewell game. This is in the Mitsubishi Motors Las Vegas Bowl. It's 4:30 p.m. on ABC on Saturday, December 21st. It's going to be Chris Peterson's final college game, at least until he comes out of retirement in a few years. So that'll be interesting, going against his first team in college, his last team in college, facing off on the field. Washington, I mean, we'll get into it a little bit more the week of, but they're somehow an early 3.5-point favorite over Boise State.
Oh.
So 5-loss team, favorite over 1-loss team. That is Power 5 versus Group of 5 right there, but also a Washington team that got maybe a little bit unlucky this year.
Yeah, a little bit. So we'll see. We'll preview that one later. Next we have
USC Trojans.
USC is taking on Iowa Hawkeye. The hell's a Hawkeye?
They are the Hawkeyes, yes.
Hang on.
What is a Hawkeye?
What is a Hawkeye?
I assume it's the eye of a hawk, but I don't know. Just like it's not the whole bird, it's just the eye, I assume. That's my assumption.
Oh, no, it's another one of the Native American things. Iowa's nickname is the Hawkeye State as a tribute to Chief Black Hawk.
Oh, okay.
So whatever we do for the Ute, I guess, which is probably a little bit racist and like not great, but I guess we'll just, yeah, whatever.
Ding.
Anyway, yeah, thung. Yeah. So USC taking on Iowa in the Holiday Bowl, the San Diego County Credit Union Holiday Bowl, I'll have you know, at 5 p.m. on Friday, December 27th, so a little post-Christmas action. So this is what we'll do. We'll preview Boise, Washington next week, and then we'll preview this whole rest of this slate of games the following week.
Okay.
So USC, I mean, I thought it was a resounding effort to make a bowl game this year. Real rebound from Clay Helton. They're going to be obviously raring to go in this one, knowing that they've got their man back.
Fans are fired up. They're going to be driving down the freeway to go to this game.
They're going to flock to San Diego, like the, salmon of Capistrano. I don't know. They're going to do something.
Swallows?
Swallows. There we go. In like maybe 10s, 20s of fans.
Not carloads. Just that's the total number of fans. They'll be sharing rides. But
They might take a train. They might take one train. So Iowa's favored by 1.5. It'll be a very boring game. Iowa is not fun to watch, but USC kind of is. So I think USC blows them out. But we'll talk about that more in weeks to come.
Pretty good matchup, number 22 and number 16, 8-4 versus 9-3. And there was a little drama. We'll talk about where the Utes ended up. But it could have been because it was pretty clear you had three teams that were above 500 in conference. So Oregon and Utah obviously played for the championship. Utah was 8-1, and USC was 7-2. Everybody else in the conference was below 500, and so it's crazy. Everyone was at least 4-5. So there, you usually for the bowl selection, if you're within a game, there's some wiggle room there where a bowl could pick a team that's ranked lower if they're within a game because it's close enough. And USC and Utah were actually within a game. If you remember last year, Utah got overlooked for the Alamo Bowl, and they took Washington State instead. And that wasn't very cool for Utah. They lose in the championship game, and they kind of get passed up. Could have happened again, but like you said, with the dozens of fans that would want to go to this game, it didn't happen this year. But there, that was like some of the drama, I guess, that was going on with bowl selection. Once you kind of figured out that Utah wasn't going to make that at-large spot for the Cotton Bowl, which there was, you know, holding out some hope for, but blowout loss in the championship game probably didn't help that.
No.
Next up on the same day, we have
Washington State Cougars.
In the shit showy Cheez-It Bowl, it was a shit show last year, right? Last year was the one that was the Cheez-It Bowl to remember.
That yes, I believe it was.
Like the worst game of all time.
It was 2-0 or something. It was something like that, right?
It was like 10-7 or something. But like hilariously bad. 7:15 on ESPN on that same day. So you can watch. Yeah, you'll have to overlap games. That's great. Two Pac-12 affiliated bowls where there'll be overlapping on the same day. Gotta love it. Gotta love it.
Yeah.
Air Force.
Cal lost to TCU 10-7 last year. Fun.
Yeah. Air Force. What are they? The Falcons?
They are. Yes.
I don't know. I don't know how to make a bird sound.
I don't know. Yeah.
Tweet, tweet? Like, tweet, tweet is not a falcon, though. I was trying to make, like, the wing sound. You know, like, big wings on a falcon, but I don't know.
Yeah. Falconry is a thing. Like, people talk about
maybe that. A jet sound, like a shoo.
Where do you stand on, like, the people that say you should train falcons, like, at every school? So, like, if there's a shooter, like, the falcon goes after the shooter. Do you think that's cool?
I've never heard – you are the first person I've heard say anything remotely like that.
Really, yeah.
I think that sounds insane.
If you just have, like, a bird hanging out, you just feed it some, you know, worms or something, and then –
like, how big is a bird's brain?
No, but like, I think they could mess with you. Like, I think if you want to disrupt, that's what they're saying.
No, no, no. Yeah. No, you're training it to, like, spot a gun. So some kid takes out, like, a candy bar, and it sees it from afar, and it what? Like, murders the kid?
No, I don't know if it can murder it. It would, like, ruin his day.
I mean, maybe ruin his life. Those things take their claws to your face or something?
True.
Dude,
you're always like a glass half empty kind of guy.
I'm anti Falcons in school.
I'm just seeing more Falcons around. Like, they use them for things.
Yeah. As you know about me, I am a long standing anti Falcons in school proponent.
I know that's the first thing I knew about you. Yeah.
Yeah. Air Force is favored in this game against Washington State.
Really?
Phoenix. Yeah.
They are a double digit win team, and Washington State's 500. So,
yep. Yep.
Cheez-It Bowl, we'll see. Phoenix, Arizona. Hopefully there. I think there's going to be a little bit more action in this one. But you got like Air Raid versus Air Force. There's, you know, some good stuff there.
Ooh, I liked it. I liked it.
You like that?
Yeah, it was good.
All right. So this is getting close.
But Air Force attacks you from the ground.
They do, which is kind of, you know, there's some irony, I guess, there.
Yeah.
next up, we have
California Golden Bears.
What the hell? How do you do an Illini? I think we're doing another Ute sound, which is really, really, really underscoring how racist that thing is.
We're Native American heavy in this bowl season.
Yeah, geez, we're Big Ten heavy, which is the worst part. All right, this is on Monday, December 30th. Cal and Illinois in the beautiful Red Box Bowl in Santa Clara, California. Levi's Stadium, the great Levi's Stadium at 1 p.m. on that wonderful day. God, I imagine this game's going to be boring as hell. Cal's favored by 7.
Yeah.
Go Bears.
What a dump that place is. Our friend Bruce Feldman's going to be on the call.
Hey!
And there's a little Pac-12 flair. You got a bunch of former USC players and coaches on the Illini squad, so Cal will be familiar with some of them.
Yeah?
Yeah. I don't know. It's December 30th. It's an afternoon Fox game. Levi's terrible. If Chase Garbers plays, Cal could be kind of fun. When Chase Garbers plays, Cal's not bad.
True.
Yeah.
Good point. No, I mean, we can watch the true Pac-12 player of the year, Chase Garbers.
Yeah, the fact that he didn't make, I mean, he wasn't even, It's just so annoying. That, like, how could you not? He's by far the MVP, probably of the decade. He's probably the best player of the decade in the Pac-12.
I think we've made an ironclad case in the past.
Yeah. I mean, they stink without him. They're good with him. It's pretty clear. All right. We only got a couple left next.
Utah Utes.
There it is. Texas Longhorns. What does steer do? Moo. This is on at 4:30 p.m. You skipped the early game, but it's fine. Whatever.
Did I?
There's another Pac-12 game on before this one, but This one's on at 4:30 on ESPN on New Year's Eve in the Alamo Bowl. Utah and Texas. Texas playing an effectively a home game, but Utah's favored by 7.5, which is reflective of their quality over Texas. Texas was very disappointing this year.
Yeah, but that's one of those Pac-12 games that you could lose. I mean, Texas got athletes, and Utah struggles with athletes. So this would be a pretty big blow for the Pac-12 if Utah can't handle the athletes that Texas have. I don't like this matchup for Utah very much, being played in Texas. And I'm sorry about out of order. This is the order the Pac-12 sent in their official release. So
the Pac-12 is garbage, as we have firmly said on this podcast, this very show.
I'm trying to think of what
would be.
And we
will not abide by their nonsense.
And even if it was like alphabetical by day, it's like the Valero Alamo Bowl and the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl. So it just didn't. Yeah, none of this makes sense. I don't know why they would list that one first, but we'll see. You know, I think for the conference, it's important that Utah gets a win here and like a pretty good win. But like I said, potential matchup nightmare with a lot of athletes that Texas has. All right, we got two left. Next one is a little earlier that day, as David said.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
What the hell? Florida what? State Seminoles.
Yeah.
This is just really highlighting for me how much of a problem we have with our mascot naming conventions. Because I can't make a sound effect for this. I'm refusing to do it at this point.
You can't do, oh.
Is that a Seminole?
Well, that's what they do. That's what the Florida State people
do. So they just steal the Braves thing?
The Braves, the...
Indians?
I don't know if the Indians do it. The Kansas City Chiefs do it, I believe.
Oh, my God. Do we, like... Wow,
but Florida State, I don't know who did it first. I thought Florida State might have been the first team to do it, but maybe not. I don't know.
God damn. It's just so much. But USC, so damn much.
USC played them in the 90s, so I got to see it. But yeah, they did it way back when.
Name your university after like the mythical losing side of a war 4,000 years ago, like somebody. Not whatever. Anyway. On at 11 a.m. on CBS, Florida State, ASU, in the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl.
That seems like, a little strange.
That sounds like butt. This is in El Paso. Great town. I know I talk up the Sun Bowl every year. Everybody there is so nice, except when Lane Kiffin was there. But everyone else is so nice.
Yeah.
ASU, favored by 4.
Oh.
Mike Norvell is the new coach at Florida State, or will be. Won't coach this game, but will coach soon thereafter. So it'll be a little bit of a homecoming-ish type thing for him. He'll be able to watch two teams, that one he's going to be affiliated with, one he was affiliated with. So that's kind of neat.
Yeah. That is neat. And Willie Taggart, he's taken over for Lane Kiffin at FAU. Lane Kiffin going to Ole Miss. So the SEC gets a little more fun, and Willie Taggart finds a job. It's former Oregon.
Good for Willie.
Yeah.
Good for Willie. The only Pac-12 coach who blocked me on Twitter.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's hard for me to blame people for blocking you.
Can I tell you that the reason he blocked me on Twitter is a very important cause near and dear to all of our hearts.
What was it?
He had punted on a fourth and short from inside the opponent's 50.
And so you let him have it, and he didn't.
I let him have a little bit of vitriol. I might have tagged him. I might not have. Who knows? but I tied it back to that because I found one day that he no longer. Would allow me to see his profile.
That's awesome. At least, you know, it's either like, you know, his little assistant or something, or he did it himself. Hopefully he did it himself. That's bad.
I hope he did it himself. I hope he felt, well, and I don't think I had tagged him, so I think it was somebody, either him or him, somebody else, who was name searching too. So I want to say it was him.
Yeah.
You know?
Cool.
So that's good.
But the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl. That seems very strange. The San Diego, I used to love it when it was Pacific Life Holiday Bowl, like when you had the whale and everything. That was great. For whatever reason, that didn't work out. It became like the San Diego Credit Union, which is fine. Then I think a year that I went to it a few years back, it like didn't have a sponsor. It was like some private guy that like sponsored or something. It was really weird. I think it was like a USC alumni or something like sponsored the game. But they're back to the San Diego Credit Union. But the bowl sponsorships, I don't know. It's interesting. It must be a decent investment because otherwise every bowl wouldn't have these sponsors. But sometimes you get some really weird ones.
Yeah.
We'll jump into questions now because David, you know,
we've got one more. We've got one more.
Wait, what do we have?
The damn Rose Bowl.
Son of a. Oh my God. I thought we did.
Oh my God. No, you're doing wonderful.
Let's just go into questions.
You're doing so great.
I pulled it out. I like closed out the window. I'm like, okay, so we'll talk about the Rose Bowl next and then move on. But then we kept talking, or I kept talking, and then I forgot about it. All right, one last one. Okay, to my defense, this bowl normally isn't associated with the Pac-12. It's a new association. It's one of the new ones we have.
Oregon Ducks.
Taken on Wisconsin. Badger, 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 mushroom, mushroom. That's a little callback for all you old internet heads.
Nice.
Ryan might not get it. It's fine.
I don't.
On at 2 p.m. on New Year's Day. ESPN, Oregon taking on Wisconsin. Top 10 teams in the Rose Bowl. Wisconsin's favored by 3. That'll
really?
Be cool. Huh. I think that's going to be a fun game.
Jonathan Taylor, tailback. He's very, very good. We'll see how he does against the Oregon tough defense, even though, you know, it must be not. I don't think the Oregon defense is that good. They only have one all Pac-12 team, not even a first teamer. So they can't be that good of a defense, I'm assuming.
If the Oregon we saw against Utah showed up all year, they'd be in the playoff.
Yeah. They would. Well, they were beating Auburn most of that game. The ASU.
But if they show up in this game, they'll blow out Wisconsin.
Yeah. The ASU.
Because Wisconsin is basically just Utah.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's fair. The ASU game still baffling to see. You know, like wow, how the hell did that happen? There was some drama about would Penn State go instead of Wisconsin. In this game, I think the fact that Wisconsin was beating Ohio State in the early part of that championship game in the Big Ten, that probably helped them. But there was some talk that Penn State would go in over Wisconsin. That didn't happen. Penn State, I think, ended up in the Cotton Bowl. But they ended up getting – Penn State got the at-large spot that Utah was trying to get to have another team in the New Year's Six. So, and again, only one Pac-12 team in the New Year's Six that costs millions of dollars for the conference. But yeah, it should be a good one. I don't know if I'm going to go this year and then forget that I went to it. Since I forgot that I went to the last year's Rose Bowl, it's like, do I want to spend the money to go?
Your performance on today's podcast, I do think you will go and I do think you will forget about it.
Yeah, that's good. I probably should take cold medicine right before you get on the air too. Like that does.
Oh no, it's great. No, this is I think really adding something to it for
okay.
Everyone.
Did I forget anything else? Can we go into questions?
No, I think we're all set now.
Holy cow. Okay. We had Eric wrote in. He said there's a new USC intro sound. And the last one we got that was new was awesome. Someone made this.
Washington State Cougars.
So they, you know, because we had the meow, and that was like that was easy. I could just upload it to the board. And this is a sound. All it is a YouTube link to a pipe dropping on the ground. So he said, since USC's decided to lay down their sword for the foreseeable future, please use this sound drop whenever USC does USC things. Eric, there's no production around it. It's a YouTube link to a pipe dropping on the ground. I don't think that's funny or I don't know. Like, this is better, like, if you want to say something USC does.
Dumbest.
But just like a pipe drop, I don't know. Maybe I'm missing it. Am I missing something, Dave?
Can we make the USC drop the dumb, dumber, dumbest from here on out?
Well, someone has to like edit it in with the USC. You know, you got to put USC
involved.
Good
point, good point. Yeah. The thing is, like, I just Googled dropping sword sound, and there's like a knife drop sound effect out there.
Oh,
so I don't know why you would go with the pipe dropping because it's. I mean, we're not playing it, but it's noticeably a pipe dropping. Like, it doesn't sound anything like a sword dropping on the ground.
Yeah. But yeah, if someone wants to put that together, Eric, I'm just saying, you know, sending us a YouTube link is, you know, it's just, it's nice, I guess, but it's not like editing sound and sending us a WAV file or MP3 that we can just upload. So,
yeah, we appreciate that.
But yeah, I'm not going to take the time to like download the sound off the YouTube and then like merge it into all the other stuff. Yeah, I can't do it. Sorry.
I get it. All right, I'll do this next one.
Okay.
This is from Bob. Hey guys, it's your loyal and probably only Alaskan, Bob. So I just wanted to make one remark and two questions. So I actually fell in the trap y'all set and went on Mack Weldon's website to buy the underwear. At first, I really didn't really like it, so I used their try-on guarantee and got a refund with no questions asked. I didn't even have to return the underwear. But after a few more weeks, I realized that they're extremely comfortable with my ABU's, Airman Battle Uniform. I'm in the Air Force.
Oh.
So I ended up buying a few more pairs. And you two weren't lying. These are some of the most comfortable underwear on the market. Wow.
That's really
so,
nice, Bob. Thanks.
Bob worked at it, and then he decided they were, you know? I love that. I love the stick-to-itiveness.
Yeah.
Anyways, done with that. So my questions. Now that the regular season is over, how often are you guys going to upload new videos through the off-season as well as the bowl season? So new podcast, I'm sure you meant. Well, we're going to try to stick to once a week.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that'd be... Yeah. I mean, there might be some weird Christmas stuff, but...
I think our average the last 2 years is doing like 50 episodes, right?
I would think so.
We probably skip like 2 weeks over the course of the season.
Yeah, we've been
over the course of the year.
Pretty consistent. There won't be as long because we're probably not going to get as many questions and stuff. But when we were, you know, full on six games to recap, six to preview, and like 25 questions, yeah, you're more than 2 hour show. But it should be that long. But we plan on keep doing them. And it should be a little bit easier. I got a new laptop. So when I'm on the road, hopefully we can, it'll be a little bit better recording. But yeah, we plan to keep doing them.
Very exciting. And then he said, my other question is, do you think it would be better for the conference to get two teams in the New Year's Six or just one? The pros for two teams in the New Year's Six is that the Pac-12 gets more national attention. And according to John Wilner, a conference will receive $4 million for each team that plays in a non-playoff bowl under the arrangement. So the athletic departments will get a few hundred thousand dollars. However, the main con I can see is that the Pac-12 will probably do worse in their games. If Utah went to the Rose and Oregon was slotted in the Alamo Bowl, then they would face a lesser opponent compared to if they were in the college football playoff and Rose, and that would go down the line for every bowl game. The scenario happened in 2017-2018 bowl season, which the Pac-12 went 1-8. USC and Washington went to the Cotton and Fiesta, which meant that all of the other Pac-12 teams had to play a harder opponent, which probably contributed to our horrible bowl record and the Pac-12's current malaise. You definitely want two teams in the New Year's Six.
Yes.
What you're arguing for, Bob, here is essentially you want the Pac-12 to be downgraded to like a really good group of five conference, which it's not yet. But no, you want two teams in. You want to be able to measure against. And frankly, outside of the top three or four teams, I would expect the two best Pac-12 teams to be pretty competitive with everyone else.
Yeah.
Utah and Oregon. I wouldn't want to see Alabama, probably, because they're probably a lot better than their record indicates right now. But everyone else from basically, honestly, Oklahoma on down, but Georgia on down, I don't think the difference is that extreme that you don't want to see them tested on the field.
Yeah, I think, Bob, first of all, thanks for your service and awesome that you wrote in from Alaska. But I agree with Dave. You want to get those teams in. You can't be afraid to have worse bowl matchups. I mean, you want to get into the better bowls possible, you know, and play good teams and get some good wins. I know it's not been often that the Pac-12 has been getting good wins, but favored in most of these, right, Dave? Pac-12 favored in almost all of them, like 5 of 7 or something. Is that right?
Let me see. We've got Wisconsin favored. We've got Air Force favored and Iowa favored. So four of the seven, they're favored.
Okay.
Pac-12 team.
Yeah, but even those are like a 1 point favorite or two, you know, they're pretty close.
There's nothing extreme.
Yeah. There's not like a Pac-12 team. I think what Bob's saying though is like maybe you get a double digit underdog if you move up. But I think you gotta try to move up.
You would maybe see it with Oregon if like Oregon was matched up against like Bama, I think you would probably see like a 10-point something like that Bama favored by.
Yeah.
But other than that, I really don't. I mean, none of the teams that are out of the playoff would be that heavy of favorites over Oregon or Utah.
No, and I think if you're looking, say Utah moved up, say Utah did get the spot, they would be playing, who is it? Is it Memphis or Cincinnati? Like they're playing in the Cotton Bowl, they'd play the Group of Five winner. So Not yeah, but that's it's not like you're not playing LSU. You're playing a group of five, you know, really good team. Utah should be able to handle that. Then USC moves up to play Texas. Like, that's fine. Like, that might be a better matchup for the Pac-12 just because athlete versus athlete. And everyone else moves up. I mean, whoever ends up playing Iowa, yeah, like if Cal had to play Iowa, probably not going to be good. But, you know, I think you got to take those chances when you can.
Absolutely.
John and Brea wrote in, ugh, is the subject. Dear Ryan and Dave, could this week have gone any worse for the Pac-12? How does Larry Scott still have his job? His comments after the game about the playoff made me feel ill. Champagne Larry is okay with the way things are currently? Seriously?
The truth is, we all know Champagne Larry likes to roll large, right?
I mean, obviously it would have been better for the league as a whole if Utah had won. Because then they would have had a playoff team and, you know, probably Oregon still goes to the Rose Bowl or something like that. But I don't know. I think there's ways it could have gone worse. I mean, the thing is, it was kind of what we knew all year. Utah and Oregon are both pretty damn good and not quite playoff teams. I think we saw if Oregon had played that way all year, they would have been in the playoff. But they just weren't able to, you know, have that exact level of consistency. But I don't know. I mean, Look, there's a lot of things that are a referendum on Larry Scott. I don't think this is one of them.
This was, I don't remember. I know Canzano wrote something that was kind of interesting where he was sort of checking out, I think, at Larry's, you know, he met with everyone, the media afterwards, and I don't think any of the Pac-12 CEO group was there. He asked about the quest to sell equity, and he just said the status, it's ongoing, so nothing really was there. He was asked about expanding to an 18 playoff. He said, well, we designed the playoff. We understood there was four spots, there being five big conferences plus independents. That would mean years that team wouldn't get in. So we understood that. It was just sort of like, you know, the same stuff. There wasn't really, he just kind of checked out, but I guess he got to talk to him afterwards. And, you know, and it's to him, it seemed like Larry Scott has learned some things. He's involving athletic directors more now. It seems like he's kind of getting it more than what he was before, where it was just sort of before he would tell people like, you know, hey, this is my way. I don't know if he just knows that his job could potentially be on the line. He asked Larry Scott about if he had been told by conference members to stand down and not like act that way. He said, I think I took some shots that were unfair. This is a quote from Canzano talking to Larry Scott. I'm not trying to duck it. I took some things to heart. I think the perception was that I was out there marching to my own beat, and I've tried to present that we're more together. So that was more about he hasn't been out there kind of on his own, speaking at every game. He used to go to every, you know, a Pac-12 game every week and speak all the time, and now he's kind of backed off of that. So it seemed like, I don't know if you got to read the piece. It's from a couple of days ago on OregonLive.com, but check it out. You know, it's interesting, and I think he was more contrite, I think, with Canzano in this one when they got to talk a little bit one-on-one. And Canzano seems to be less critical of him. I mean, he doesn't like everything that he's doing. And, you know, but it seems like he's getting it a little bit more.
Sure.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
All right.
All right. We've got Ryan next. Off-season idea. You two are easily the best part of being a fan of this conference. Bless your sweethearts. Aw, thanks, Ryan.
He must be Southern.
It's so frustrating that our champion is one that lost to two true freshman quarterbacks, including one that was starting his first college game. Why do we get stuck with Sherbert, he put an S in front of Herbert, when everyone else gets something decadent? Why do I even care? So to my off-season idea, please bring on a psychologist from each of the schools to convince us to care as much about the Olympic sports that we're actually good at. God damn it, Ryan.
Hey, Sherbert's underrated. Like, I wish I had some now. When you're sick, a little, like, your throat's hurting, orange sherbet, that's good stuff.
No, sherbet rules. Yeah, no, I don't think I've had it since I was a kid. That stuff
really
rules.
I've got it as an adult, like when I'm feeling bad. I can't believe I should have bought some now.
Some orange sherbet?
Yeah. Like your throat gets, it's like hurting, and that stuff feels good.
Oh, wow. This is one of those things that's like the Berenstain Bears. I could have sworn it was sherbet. It's sherbet.
Is it?
It's S-H-E-R-B-E-T.
Oh. I guess I pronounced it wrong forever. But don't people, I think people say Sherbert though, right?
I think they do. But so you know the Mandela effect, right? What? Which is that all of us grew up like thinking a certain thing, but then it's actually wrong or something like that.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
like this group idea that ends up being incorrect. And one of the famous examples is the Bernstein Bears, which everyone thinks it's the Bernstein, like S-T-E-I-N, but it's actually the Berenstain, B-E-R-E-N-S-T-A-I-N.
Oh.
Yeah. So, anyway, I think that's Sherbert.
Interesting. Maybe we all just got it wrong. It's sort of like if you go outside when it's cold, you'll catch a cold. Like, I don't think that's true, right? Or is that real? I don't know. It's one of those things, though, where you're like...
Well, that's like just an old wives thing. This is like collective, like, illusion or some shit.
Okay.
It's wild.
So that wouldn't be considered. Anyway. If that's not true, that's just like a wives tale, not a collective illusion.
Yeah, that's just a wives tale.
But if everyone thinks it, then I guess it would be the collective illusion.
Right. Right.
All right. This is from Frank in Sacramento. Pac-12 playoff woes for years is the subject. The Pac-12 won't be in the playoff for at least 5 years. Whoa. It's close this year, Frank. Come on. One, their best coach, Chris Peterson, retired. Okay. Two, USC failed to go after an elite coach. Fair. They're not going to make the playoff anytime soon. The conference can't produce a no-loss or one-loss team. True. A lot of Twitter arguments this week, David, with the 9 conference games versus 8 conference games.
I saw.
Do you get involved? Do you get mad when I respond on the Pac-12 Twitter?
I love it. I love it when you offer your personal opinion on our co-run, obviously 50-50 account that I use an even amount compared to you.
That you never touch? Or do you still have the password or no?
I believe so. Yeah, I mean, I think they can. The issue is primarily, really, that Oregon lost to ASU,
yeah.
And that would happen even if they were in an 8-game conference. Well, maybe they would have been on the wrong rotation, but
yeah, that would be like to me. That's the 9th game. That's the game you don't need to play.
Okay. We can just cherry pick whichever one you lose
right.
is the 9th game you didn't need to play.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, you wouldn't if. No matter what, you wouldn't have played ASU after already having played 8 other conference games. So, yeah, you know, I think you would have been better off in that game if you had an 8-game conference schedule. Number 4, he said, 9-game conference schedules weakens all the team's records. I agree with that. That's mathematically correct. 5, California recruits continue
to... It weakens their records, not right. necessarily their resume.
And we're getting... that's the kind of argument I've got into with... was it Andrew? The eye chart guy. And he keeps arguing about this with strength of schedule and stuff. And it's like the committee has shown that doesn't matter. The matters is that extra loss. That extra loss is what kills you. So don't have the extra loss. When you do 9-game conference schedule, not only every other year, you're getting 5 conference away games. That's a disadvantage. And then you're playing that extra conference game. You can play a good team out of conference, but the extra loss is what you're trying to avoid. And he's saying, like, well, your strength of schedule will go down by 0.06%. And blah, blah, blah. It's like, they don't care about that. They care about losses.
Well, I do think we're kind of getting lost in the weeds a little bit, which is if Utah or Oregon were good enough, meaning if they were in the top 6-ish, the way every single one of the playoff teams are in, say, the SP Plus or any other analytic system, they'd be in. Because that would have meant that they probably would have only had one loss. The reason they're not in is because they weren't good enough. That's it. It's not the record thing, because Oklahoma would win that resume battle if they had one fewer loss each. And you're not going to massage the schedule to the point where you're ending up undefeated with one of these two teams this year. You're just not going to do it. They weren't good enough. So I see what both of you are saying, but it doesn't really matter because the teams themselves were not good enough, and they haven't been good enough since basically 2016 when Washington made it. When they're good enough, they'll make it, and when they're not going to be like finagled in there. Every team except Oklahoma is in the top 4 of the SP Plus, and the one that isn't is 2-loss Alabama, which is in the top 4. It's actually the second best team in the country if you believe that analytics system, but a 2-loss team isn't going to make it in.
But the SEC gets the benefit of the doubt a lot of times, but that it helps the entire conference that everyone doesn't have to play that extra conference game. And then you get wins over top 25 teams in the SEC, the teams that shouldn't be in the top 25, but they are because they don't. They only play the eight conference games. I mean, you see teams in the SEC going 2-6 in conference and making a bowl game. It's just that it's to me, the playing field
isn't
level.
Yeah, but that's a different thing. Making a bowl game isn't a judge of quality. It's a judge of whether or not you got to six wins.
But then it's like, oh, you beat these bowl teams. Like, so the SEC is going to get more teams that are ranked.
Yeah, but who cares about that? That's like a resume for after the season's over.
And they
like,
talk about top 20. They talk about top 25 wins though. In the you know, USC came into play because Oregon had a top 25 win when USC got ranked, and Utah's loss was to a top 25 team. So I mean, that matters.
Are we saying Auburn is not worthy of being a top 20? Well, I mean, I guess it doesn't. That's a different thing from just counting wins. Like counting wins is what you do to get a bowl game, but that's a different thing from judging and assessing quality. And the rankings, I think the CFP rankings have been imperfect, but I think they've done a pretty decent job of judging quality.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the. You know, just to use it as like one guidepost. I know there are a bunch of different analytic systems, but if you look at the SP Plus, USC, right there at number 22. And that's a system that's judging efficiencies, not, you know, just counting wins and losses. Utah is number 9. Oregon's number 16. Washington's number 17.
Interesting.
Yeah, these are all teams that, I mean, were quality teams, but none of them were good enough or should have been in the playoff this year.
See, like a Washington team, though, result. Like Washington, if the conference has a 8-game schedule, Washington's probably 8-4 instead of 7-5 and ranked too, you know, and they're probably in the college football top 25, and that's an extra top 25 win for Oregon. So I think
it's... Yeah, but if Washington's just a little bit... I mean, if Washington's just a little less unlucky this year, I mean, the thing was they just like lost a lot of close games.
No, I mean, you can overcome the, but that's, you shouldn't have to overcome nine. Like, the SEC doesn't have to get lucky sometimes because the schedule's set up where you can be not that good and still look better. Like, I think the 9-game conference schedule, you're going to look a lot closer to what you really are, which isn't good when you're facing off. You're in a beauty contest with someone that has a lot better makeup than you. You know what I mean? Like,
SEC. Yeah, but it's not just makeup. I mean, the team qualities are better. I mean, Alabama and LSU and Georgia, for that matter,
right.
would probably each blow away Utah. Well, not blow them away, but they'd probably each be favored by, I don't know, at least 5 on a neutral field over Utah and at least 8 or 9 on a neutral field over Oregon. And that's just the reality of the team's quality.
What do you think the gap is between the SEC and the Pac-12 right now, as far as like overall quality or whatever?
I think you could assess the middles of both conference at about even. But the simple fact of the matter is, Alabama, LSU, and Georgia, are recruiting at a different level than any, team in the Pac-12. As a general rule, they get those Southern defensive linemen, which you just can't find on the West Coast. And those three programs are just better than anybody in the Pac-12 right now. I think when we're talking about the future of the Pac-12, I think this is what you get to Wilner's point. USC is the one program in the conference that's shown historically that it can be at that level for a period of time, more than like a few years here and there. We'll see on Washington and Oregon. You know, Cristobal might be able to do it. He's a relatively young guy. Maybe he's able to sustain it for a long period of time and consistently get top 10 talent there, and then maybe that program is sustainable. But, you know, I think the jury's out on that. And Washington, we'll see what happens with Jimmy Lake. I'm bullish on Jimmy Lake, but we'll see. But those two programs don't have the historic pedigree that USC does. But it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. I would just say, like, there's a significant gap now between the two conferences. I think if the Pac-12 only had to play 8 conference game schedules and the SEC had to play 9, I think that gap wouldn't look as wide. I think it's a big advantage for these conferences. So not just for the team at the top, but for everyone up and down the, you know, up and down the ranks. So, but we'll leave it at that. Let's see. Number 5, California recruits continue to leave. This we're talking about Pac-12 woes for years, and then bad deals keeps many games off television.
Well, I don't think that matters.
They're on television. They're just not on television that everyone can watch. Yeah,
I also don't think it matters. I think Chris Peterson's definitely a reason, and USC not getting an elite coach is definitely a reason. The rest of it is all, marginal. I think those two. The number one thing the Pac-12 needs to figure out is how to improve its team quality. That involves getting better coaches. It involves keeping talent home more. That's the thing to control. The other stuff, I think it's just rearranging, not deck chairs on the Titanic, but something like that. I think it's dealing with a lot of window dressing that's not actually getting to the root of the matter, which is the Pac-12 hasn't had a team good enough to make the playoff in 3 years. And the last one was Washington in 2016, who made it.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Yeah. Next up, we've got Hitha Day.
Ooh, nice.
All right. We've got Genesis 8:11. Let me pull this one up. Is the subject line. Oh, when the dove returned to him in the evening, there in its beak was a freshly plucked olive leaf. Then Noah knew that the water had receded from the earth. All right. So after the flood. Okay. Cool. Got that in our brains. Over the years, I've heard quite a few explanations for Oregon's record, including that a brilliantly coached scheme covered up for mediocre quarterback play, and that a transcendent signal caller bailed out lousy coaches. Still, it was quite novel this season to learn from every fan base and commentator each and every week that the Ducks were substandard at both coaching and quarterbacking. Since I know the sources of these criticisms to be objectively intelligent and well-informed, I'm sure they must be true, and so I wonder, what factors allowed Oregon to overcome them? I'm sure it had something to do with Phil Knight's money, it always seems to, but how exactly? If it's having talented players, what explains the records of programs like UW and USC? I look forward to your boys' thoughtful and reflective input. Thank you, Hitha Day. Mm-hmm. I appreciate this. It is not in any way dripping with scorn. Okay. So here's the thing.
I don't know if they were substandard in coaching, right? Like, coaching was fine.
It was fine. And that's the thing I'd say about the quarterbacking, too. It wasn't mediocre. Justin Herbert's good. Yeah. I called BS on the idea that he was the number one pick in the draft. I think he's pretty good.
Yeah.
I think he's a pretty good quarterback. And I think Cristobal is. Certainly showed some issues with clock management this year. I don't think he's a great game manager. Certainly a good recruiter. Got a bunch of talent in there. So, yeah. I mean, they have a bunch of talent. So that's a big part of it. But in addition to that, I think... I don't love the offensive scheme, but it certainly seemed to work for the offensive line that they had. So I'll give them kudos for that. And by the end of the year, they were, doing things at a pretty dominant level against Utah. So can't knock it too much.
Here you go, Hitha Day. So I know you're not used to having like the most talented team in the conference or anything like that. So this is new territory for you. But this is what happens when you have better players than your opponents. You're not going to get the kind of credit that you would get otherwise. You can't be the lovable underdog when you have better players than everyone. Now you're going to get treated differently. If someone comes out and says your quarterback's supposed to be the number one pick in the draft, and he looks like a first round draft pick, but not a top 10 draft pick, you're going to get criticized for that. And is he amazing? He's still an amazing quarterback. He's still going to be a high draft pick, but he hasn't lived up to the hype that what you had, and you're going to be expected to be better than you are, and your coaches aren't going to get as much credit because your players are really good. Who brought those players in? Your coaches. But that's just the way it works. When Pete Carroll was winning all those championships and seven whatever BCS bowl games in a row, you weren't giving him coach of the year. He had better players than everybody. That's kind of the way it's understood. So Oregon is sort of in that spot now, I would say. So you can't take that, I wouldn't forget that you're not the underdog anymore. You're the big dog. You won the Pac-12. You're on top. Yes, you're going to have to, you have to be amazing. You can't lose two games with that kind of talent. And then people are going to give you lots of credit for coaching well and things like that. That's not the way it worked. You're going to have to go undefeated. And then people are going to go, wow, that's amazing. If not, they're going to say, oh, they squandered all the talent they had.
Yep.
Is that fair? Hitler hasn't been in that position before. See, if you cover USC, you know that. That's like everyone knows that.
Yeah.
At least around USC.
Agreed.
This is from Eric. One observation about USC and two questions. Hey, guys. So he said the same thing. And okay, I won't read that again. He put in the subject and then put in this first line of the thing. I'm like, okay. One, as a Colorado fan, I can't help noticing some interesting parallels between Mike Bohn's current situation at USC and a situation at Colorado a decade ago. If you don't know, Mike Bohn's the new USC athletic director, used to be the AD at Colorado, that was Cincinnati afterwards. The Buffs were 3-9 in 2009 under Dan Hawkins, who had not had a winning season at Colorado and was experiencing an obvious downward trend. Seemed like Hawkins should have been fired, but the university was still dealing with reputational and financial fallout from the rape scandal under Gary Barnett. The university actively wanted to avoid doing anything that made it look like football was a priority, so they kept Hawkins an extra year. Finally firing him after he blew a 42-17 lead in the fourth quarter at Kansas. Ouch. Keeping Hawkins as a lame duck for so long killed recruiting to the point that Colorado was one of the worst teams in FBS from 2011 to 2014, and the program has still only gone to one bowl since 2007. Bohn seems to be doing the same thing at USC now, keeping a lame duck coach around because the university is understandably prioritizing cleaning up after several scandals. USC's current recruiting class, ranking 76th in the country, indicates this is having a similar effect on recruiting at USC as it did on Colorado. If Colorado's experience is any indication, Ryan is right, it will cost them more in the long run to keep Helton in the form of lost ticket revenue and donations than it would have to fire him. I wouldn't expect it to get as bad at USC as it did at Colorado because USC has a recruiting advantage from being based in LA, and Colorado has outdated facilities at the time, or had outdated facilities at the time. But still, rough times are ahead for USC, and I'm not sure how Mike Bohn finds himself in this situation again.
That's good thoughts.
No, that's interesting. It certainly won't be as bad. And this isn't something, I mean, he's just taking over and like really only has a month in on the job. But I think you're right. I think the president really didn't want to do anything. I don't know about prioritizing football, but bringing in a big, powerful coach that could run things his own way, I think they were trying to avoid that again, which they've been avoiding in the past too, for other reasons. But with all the scandals, I think it definitely doesn't help. Two, which Pac-12 teams do you see improving next year, and which ones do you see taking a step or more back?
Okay. So taking a step back, I would say Utah, obviously. I don't see them going 11-2 again next year.
Yeah.
But a natural step back, like not a, you know, the program's in disarray type deal, but I could see them falling back to like a 7-5.
I think the Washington schools will improve. I think both Washington,
I think
Washington State.
Washington's a sneaky pick for winning the Pac-12 next year. I'm really bullish on Jimmy Lake up there.
Yeah. I think kind of Stanford stays the same. Like I don't know. I mean, it's hard
Stanford
to take a step
will be
back.
Ass again.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll be ass again. Who else could take a step back? I mean, where is Arizona stepping back from? But I think they could be really bad next year.
Yeah, it just there's so many like 6-6, 7-5 teams. It's like I don't know. I kind of feel like they'll probably still be there. There's not as many step backs or forwards from that spot, you know?
Yeah. UCLA will have a better record more than likely because the schedule is weak as hell. I don't think they're going to be meaningfully better.
Cal loses Bo Baldwin. We didn't mention that at the top. I think he took the job at Cal Poly. Is that finalized?
Which might be good.
Yeah, like I really liked what he did at Eastern Washington, but man, it just wasn't looking outside of the Garber stuff. His offenses have been butt.
Yeah, so I think that might actually be pretty good. No, I think that's probably fair. I think Utah's the obvious one to take a step back. I think Oregon will more or less maintain. I know Justin Herbert's leaving, but they do have a ton of talent. I think Washington will be better next year.
This says three. I'm also a hoops fan. I know Dave also covers basketball. Can you recommend any similar basketball podcasts? Bonus points if they're Pac-12 focused and or occasionally discuss Star Wars and Disney princesses. Thanks, guys. From Eric.
I don't know of any. My podcast listening is pretty much devoted to football and then a bunch of weirdo stuff. So I don't listen to any hoops podcasts. Do you have any in mind?
You're asking the wrong guy. No, I don't. No.
Somebody out there, provide a recommendation for a college hoops podcast so we can share it with our friend Eric.
Yeah, sorry. There's probably some good ones out there. I would guess they're not Pac-12 centric, but yeah, sorry.
That's it.
I think that's it. Yeah, that's our last question. We still went hour and 25 minutes or so.
Not bad.
I really thought we could do it in an hour.
Nope.
But
nope. You were trying to at various points, skipping past bowl games, but I wasn't going to let you.
Not only skipping past bowl games, skipping past the Rose Bowl.
That was really cool.
I was trying to be efficient, so I closed out the thing that had all the bowls on it. I was like, okay, we'll talk. I knew I was going to talk about the Rose Bowl next, but then we just kept talking, and then I forgot to talk about the Rose Bowl. So
it was a wonderful moment in podcasting history.
Just how the sausage is made. I don't know, man. There's been a lot of stuff going on.
And what's exciting for everyone out there is listening to this juncture. They won't know it, or maybe they will, but you've got a little bit of editing to do after this thing is done.
I do.
And who knows how it's going to turn out? Like, it could be really exciting. And here at the end of the show, we'll know if it succeeded or not. But I'm excited for the listeners.
Yeah. I screwed up in one of the reads, and here we are.
No. It was I thought it was natural and organic and fine. We could have kept going. You could have just said, whatever. You know, Peristyle is the promo code, and sometimes it's the Pac-12. Whatever, who cares? Live your dream.
Yeah, I don't know. It's crazy. It's been a long week. I'm ready. I'm ready for Christmas vacation. Are you?
Yes. Yes. Extremely ready. Extremely ready to be done with the day to day.
Well, you got
to
take you do stuff for your kids. You know.
Yeah. Honestly, all the holiday breaks are kind of terrible when you have children.
Yeah,
like they're not actually vacations of any sort, because you then have to just watch your children all the time. But it's fun too.
Yeah,
and I don't want to sound like a curmudgeon, but it does. You know, it's just exchanging one job for another.
Yeah, I'm going back to the East Coast to see my parents and stuff. So that should be fun.
Yeah,
kind of relaxed. We'll probably do some podcasting from Massachusetts.
We'll both be on East Coast.
We could both
time.
Be at East Coast time doing a podcast about the Pac-12. That's perfect.
It's how we drew it up on the field.
Nice. All right. Well, that's going to wrap things up. You find him on Twitter at David Woods. Find me at Inside Troy, or us together at Pac-12. Pac-12 podcast. Oh my God. That's what we are, right? Pac-12 podcast.
I think so. Who knows at this point?
We do appreciate you listening. We know you don't have a choice when it comes to Pac-12 podcasts. So we love that you listen to ours. But thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.